Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It's time to talk about a topic we don't really want to talk about, the offense in that game against the Packers. And joining me to do this is my co-host weekly on the matchup show, Frazier Tafar. Frazier, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Doing good. Could be better if we didn't talk about this game. Just a miserable performance for the offense on Saturday. But nonetheless, we're here to review it and give our roster predictions in part two.
Yeah, I think that's the big part is we're really building up to the roster predictions, and we're not going to take you through too much of this game. We have some offensive line scoring to talk about for three players. We have some individual performances that no doubt we'll talk about. We'll talk about order of entry, but I expect it to take less time than normal based on how little there was to talk about, particularly positive in this game. So hopefully we'll go a little quicker than normal. First of all, we got to bring up just for a minute or two, discuss the loss of Joe D. Obviously a devastating loss for the Ravens. One I'm not sure if they really expected or not, but it obviously it happened very quickly.
Yeah, just a very sad thing. My thoughts and prayers goes out to him and family and the team as well. It seemed a very quick transition into that stage, and just tough to see him go. And personally and for the team as well, it's not a good day for Baltimore.
No, not at all. And he died early Sunday morning. We're recording this on Monday night, so it's fresh news. On Wednesday, if you're listening to this and it's prior to Wednesday, or maybe you've already seen it out there, I did a show with Melissa Kim talking about the career of Joe D, the accomplishments the lineman he's worked with, but mostly it's about a lot of Melissa's and my recollections of seeing him at camp, enjoying the way he coached the offensive line, some of her personal stories and the times she's met him and whatnot. So some great stuff, some unbelievable testimonials from linemen who have played under Joe. James Hurst has a great one out there. It's one of the most heartfelt things you'll ever see. I thought Matt Skura had a really good one as well. Just wonderful to see these pouring out of expectations. And you know, that's what you hope you aspire to in some way in life is to leave a real legacy. And clearly he did in terms of the players he coached and in terms of how he treated people.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that kind of terrible that we would have to use this as motivation for our team. But in the sense of the offensive line, them definitely stepping up for him and really taking the criticism and advice they gave him to heart and knowing that they can't hear it anymore, I think it might give them the extra push that we need for this team. Moving towards a succession plan, I think the Ravens did do a good job of having an intern in-house and then also having an external hire ready to go for a situation like this.
Right. So they had an assisted offensive line coach in-house. That's Travell Wharton. And he had been running some practices individually. So Joe D had been missed a practice or maybe two before we heard about him being hospitalized. And Travell Wharton had been out there leading practice. And I'd actually noted that in some previous episodes of the camp notes, because his style is a little different. He uses a little bit different terminology. For whatever reason, they didn't feel comfortable promoting Travell Wharton. And my guess is that they probably had internal succession plan meetings about every position. I know that's something done in most companies where you are continually keeping on record who your successor ought to be. Not like you always get to name them, but depending on your level, you might. Oftentimes the president of the company, when he leaves, doesn't get to name his successor. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes people who are department heads do get to name their successors, and they they have it clearly planned out of who's next in line. So if they leave, or if they leave is usually the case in that case, then the people know who to go to next. And I imagine the Ravens, very well run, very business-like organization. Bisciotti would have demanded that be true pretty much of every coaching position that they had.
Yep, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on here. In terms of the game, I think it'd be difficult to come out of this game without additional concerns about the offensive line. We had some really short stints that we didn't even bother scoring. We've got some other stints from Cleveland, Jones, and Rosengarten that we'll talk about in part two. But, can't come out of this game with a great, warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, just very hard to see the offense. Can't run the ball. No real time in pass pro. Only real good play that we had was literally the play to Tylan Wallace. And other than that, it just seemed like our backs were getting hit in the backfield, penetration all day, really. It seemed like the reports that came out of that joint practice manifested itself on the team or on the field on Saturday. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just going to say there's a lot of talk from that joint practice that the Packers had been getting excellent pressure. That's one of the things that Harbaugh talked about wanting to see was facing a team that really tried to get upfield against the quarterback. He thought Dallas was a similar team in terms of what they brought. So that's really it was a wake up call. I don't know what the Ravens are going to do in terms of the three positions. It's not 100% clear to me. I've got a guess, but it's something that the right answer is somewhat elusive in here, and they may still be looking outside the organization to pick up another guard.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think we're going to continuously monitor this waiver wire for all 32 teams or 31 teams and see who's available out there. I think the in-house options we have, especially at the right guard position, really Ben Cleveland is the only one that we have, but apparently he's fallen out of favor with the team. So that's just something we can't control. It's good to hear that Linderbaum was back this week in practice, starting to get back into the groove of things. So moving forward, I think that gives us a better idea of what we might do if we keep Samac, or if we might keep Cleveland in that backup center role. But it's just going to be really hard to make this roster work for the rest of the year as is.
That does clarify some of the center options, and hopefully there's no setback from Linderbaum that will not allow him to play in the opener, because that would truly be a nuclear option. They'd be without the leader on the line in terms of who makes the line calls, who directs traffic and whatnot. And I think that would be an extremely dangerous position to be in, going into a very tough early season schedule. If Linderbaum somehow, if he missed the first month, that would be terrible. It could even be worse if they don't put him on IR. But if they do put him on IR, it's almost like they'd have to make a move outside the organization as it currently stands. They have a few choices in house that are suboptimal, I would say, in terms of what they've got. All right. The other big question for this day, of course, the quarterbacks. Johnson has clearly separated himself from the rest of the field in terms of the backup quarterback role. Emory Jones did not get much of a chance in this third game. He did in the second, but the guy who did get a chance, Devin Leary, had an extremely poor day. One of the worst you can possibly imagine in a preseason game. Two picks, a fumble, bobbled another snap, which blew a fourth and one. Just mistake after mistake in terms of putting the ball in harm's way in this game and turning it over. Where are you in terms of continuing to develop him, probably on the practice squad at this point, or just cutting bait and maybe going with a cut from another team as your developmental quarterback?
That's a really tough question, because the issue is we did invest capital in him, and our quarterback coach does see something in him. The traits are there. It's obviously not clicking mentally on the field. It's almost like keeping him on the practice squad would just be sympathy at that point, and I don't think we have time for that right now. It's almost like Emory Jones would be a better option to keep on the practice squad than Devin Leary at this point, and that's not really a good thing either because he hasn't impressed too much. I think the outlook for him could potentially be getting cut, and then if he latches onto a practice squad for the rest of the year, that'd be great for his development. But I think bringing him in next year, if that's even an option, would be the next move for Leary. I don't think he's done enough to show that he's worth being on the team right now.
All right. We'll see. We'll certainly see how that plays out. That is kind of where I am right now as well. I think, the characteristics that we saw that got the ball turned over, and also some of the paralysis in fear of interceptions that was really the trait from the first two games that I'd pull out. Stare downs in week three, the difficulty hanging on to football, the terrible decision on the read option, which led to that sack, strip sack. There's so much bad there. It's a titanic project to fix him. It's not simply throwing mechanics or teaching him to look off the safety or this or that. I mean, that's part of it. But, when there's 20 things you need to fix, and this is something you often find with when you're reviewing people in the business world, they may have 20 problems. They're so far gone that they're really hard to correct. And honestly, sometimes the best thing you can do is fire them at that point. If you want to keep them, you really like them, they're smart, there's some reason why you think they could be good at some point, you kind of have to limit to about three things you can figure on teaching them or getting them to improve in a single year. I mean, you write down 20 things, the person's going to shut down and it'd be more. And that's the way I feel like we are with Leary right now. If there's that many things to fix, it becomes a virtually insurmountable task. And we saw his play degrade going from NC State to SEC, which is definitely moving up from AAA to the major leagues.
Yes.
In terms of college football. And then obviously he is moving up to the actual major leagues in terms of coming to the NFL.
And I think the main thing that really hurts Devin is that he's a project and he's also not 6'4", 6'5", with a real build. He's like 6 foot, 6'1". He's on the shorter side of being a quarterback. So Lamar is not that tall either. So we would love to have a contingency plan that brings a different dynamic to the game because Leary isn't bringing his legs. So for him to be that short really isn't a benefit to everyone.
Yeah, great, great point. And that really showed up on the read option because I don't think he'd done that too much in his career.
Yeah.
But he basically handed that ball off with Kelly crossing his face from left to right. So Kelly was sidecar left on that play. He actually looked directly at that right defensive end on the offensive left side, that is, Mosby, and he looked right at him. And he's unblocked. And he knew it. Because that's the way the play is called. Jones is down blocking. It's his responsibility to read that play correctly. Now, he could have run that ball and hoped that Mosby did not run right at him, or he could have handed it off to Kelly, and it might have been a small gain, but it wouldn't have been a disastrous play. But the thing he couldn't do is turn his back, face right, and wind up to throw the ball. There's no way he's going to get it off.
Yeah, very tough to see that. That goes back to the character traits. He might have a gunslinger arm, but he has to have a quicker release. It's more to it than be able to sling the ball across the yard. You really need to be quick on your mechanics and your footwork. And I think, again, for him to be a project at his attributes, it's just not worth it right now.
Yeah, and that's also another component of recognition too, by the way. And those additional elements of recognition, they can be taught. They're hard to pick up. Every one of them is hard won experience in terms of, I think about, anyone who's out there who's in a fairly technical career, whether it's IT or actuarial work, or even the law, say, which is fairly technical, or medicine, think about all the years it took you to learn what you knew. I mean, that it was hard won experience. Every time you had a new operation to perform, it was a big deal. Every time you tried a case, it was a big deal and a learning experience. Well, yeah, that's what it's like going to be like for Leary. He's not going to be able to learn it in a vacuum. And unfortunately, a lot of it's going to take live fire. And I don't feel like the Ravens can invest the time in him.
Resources are not there for that right now.
All right, let's move on. We'll talk a little bit about deployment order in this game. And I'm trying to push the show on. I appreciate that, Frazier. Slow me down if you want to make sure you go for this. But in quarterback, Johnson was first, Leary second, Jones third. No surprises there. Jones didn't really get an opportunity because the Ravens were in aggressively, let's get the hell out of here mode.
Yeah.
By the time he came into the game, and they only passed the ball once and ran the ball seven times, despite trailing by 23 in the fourth quarter when Jones came in the game. So Harbaugh was sick of the injuries. You can see it written all over his face on the sideline as you know, stiff an upper lip as he can put out there for injuries. He's pissed off about it. That he's having to reinsert players late in the game. Simpson twice. He had to reinsert Urban. He had to reinsert late. Manifestation of that was Jones didn't really get an opportunity this game.
Yep. Just disappointing that Leary didn't execute on his opportunity, and then just a downfall of injuries, not giving Jones an opportunity. So quarterbacks, Johnson secured, and then two floaters at the end.
Yeah. So at running back, we had arrested Henry and Hill again. They haven't played the entire preseason, which is good. Wright came in and he was okay in this game relative to the other players here. But the problem was he ran three times for 10 yards and
blocking.
He did catch a pass, but that was called back for a holding penalty. All right. OPI on Devontae Walker.
Right.
So kind of a ticky tack call, by the way, I thought, but anyway, it was what it was. But the big news is he came out of this game with some sort of a hairline fracture to his foot. And he's one of two players that gets carted off. Well, that's the last freaking thing you want to see. Whenever I see a player carted off in the preseason, I think back to J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah.
And I thought that was probably going to be the case with Wright, is this was some sort of a serious knee or ankle injury. I don't know that they always go off the field in a cart if they've got a Liz Frank. But I hear bone fracture in the foot, and I'm worried, you know, about that particular name coming up. So with Wright, it puts the Ravens in a very difficult position in how they deal with him on the roster now. So they'd probably like to have him back at some point, but, you know, they might have to look elsewhere based on the practicalities of how they put together this roster.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be really tough for Owen Wright because he's at risk of losing his whole season. If we can't do the right gymnastics, they keep him on the team, even on short-term IR. Like you said, when you hear fracture in the foot, that doesn't sound like a month thing. It could be definitely 2-3 months down the line, and the Ravens have to make that investment in that IR stash for him. Yeah. So if they think he's worth the plans in the future, because they already have another young running back pending injury coming in, so are they willing to invest? Well, he'll be on PUP, but either way, are they willing to invest two spots on running backs for stash purposes?
Yeah, so there's two components to the stash. There's the first is they got to put them on IR, and the only the cost of that's relatively cheap. I think they're going to have room between the two free spots and cutting Urban and Worley to bring in the players they want to protect as the roster is initially built.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they've already cut a player like Pepe, who might have been a guy they'd have tried to it probably was not a guy who they were going to try to protect. But they haven't made a cut yet where they might have done something with an IR stash. Okay. But they are somewhat limited, but not as limited as they were before, by the fact that they only have two guys who really fit the bill for handshake deals. So that's Urban and Worley. Then they have two free ones, so they can't extend the roster by four. The other thing is a big serious concern is that all of the injuries, the Ravens have to pay those guys at least part of the season. They'll be released with an injury settlement probably. And I don't know how much value Wright will end up getting, but he might get paid for half a season if they release him with an injury settlement. Don't know could be something similar for Nick Samak, although he's back at practice today, so maybe not. So they've got money is probably going to be on the line with some of the injuries. Yeah, DeAndre Sanat was another one that they might end up paying. But anyway, the cost to get him on IR is not that much. The real cost comes on the back end in terms of the DTRs. So they're going to have 8 total designated to return options that they can use during the year. And they have to be very judicious at allocating them as the season goes on. Last year, they used every single one of them, in some of them speculatively at the end of the year. but they did a good job of managing the roster in that way. I think the league as a whole should probably get smarter with that, given the two free ones there are essentially at the top of the on roster day. But we'll see how this works out. I don't think it bodes well for Wright. I would love for them to find a way to keep him on the team and then keep him on the team and then move him to IR. But I don't think it's necessarily going to happen easily.
Yeah, and I think the other issue is that offensive line didn't give the running backs a chance to show what they have, so we couldn't really get that much of a look from Collier and Kelly and to see if they can potentially step up to that third running back role and not force us to look outside of the organization if it came to that. Just need really someone to hold down the fort until Keaton Mitchell gets back.
Yeah. So, and if that's really what they want, then Kelly could be the guy because he's a Band-Aid. He's a fifth year, I believe, guy who he actually doesn't have to clear waivers, so they could cut him and bring him back, which might make it easier to get Owen Wright on the roster.
Yep. And also, I think this third running back is going to be a special teams factor for sure.
Yeah,
and they have to be.
Yeah, I think they've said that. Actually, Kelly is a fourth year player according to this. So because he's only got 4 years, he may have to pass through rosters. Now, there's been some pass through waivers, I should say. There has been some confusion, I'll say, over that last year, mostly with PJ Mustafa, who had a fourth year designation and yet for some reason did not have to go through waivers. And maybe since Kelly's been bopping around the league since 2018, he'd be in a similar position. But it's my understanding he will have to go through waivers as a fourth year player.
Okay, makes sense.
He won't be taken. Don't worry, but he has to go to waivers. Yes, I mean he was out there on the street. I mean he was signed at the last second by the Ravens. Anybody could have had him. I thought actually he ran the ball pretty well, given what he had to work with. He's a good second effort runner. We haven't seen him put the ball on the ground yet, which is good. But he really works hard to get the extra yard as he's running, and he did a lot of his running without a lot of help.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that's not a. What's going to happen moving into the regular season with Derrick Henry as a running back? Because I'm not looking forward for him to have the same issues he had in Tennessee, where he's the running game,
right?
And no one's blocking for him up front. That's not what we brought him in for. So hopefully, it's not a crystal ball of what's happening.
I think it should be better than Tennessee, no matter what, because of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
So I think that should improve Henry's effectiveness. But whether he's at, he was at 46 the last 3 years combined percent success rate. Okay. I think just playing with Lamar Jackson, even if the line is worse than it was in Tennessee, he probably goes to 48, 49%. I think if it's a good year, he goes to 51. If it's a great year, he goes to 53. And if you look at Gus Edwards last year was 53.
Wow.
with Lamar. So it's, and Gus Edwards' career all with Lamar, 57.4%, which is the NFL record. So last year Keaton Mitchell was 68%. So he has a chance to be great within this structure, but part of the thing has to be the Ravens have to get him some second level opportunities for first contact.
So with that stat line, this is really, there has been no running back that has played for another team. Like during the Lamar Jackson, like Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins will be the first running backs that have played outside of Baltimore without Lamar Jackson.
I had a list of the guys. Okay, here are the guys who played elsewhere that had success with Lamar Jackson. Devonta Freeman and Latavius Murray had significant playing time for other organizations, but they're actually the two leaders in Ravens history for a success rate, which is incredible to me, at 58.6% and 58.0% with over 100 carries. That's the requirement. So they had 133 for Freeman, 119 for Murray. By comparison, Gus Edwards had 699 carries as a Raven. So he's much, if you set the carries at any kind of a reasonable level, Edwards is still the all-time leader. And if you add in Devonta Freeman and Latavius Murray's, and I'm going to go to this really quickly, Devonta Freeman, his career success rate is 50.7%, and it is, that's receiving. I'm sorry. His career success rate rushing is 46.8%.
Wow.
58.6% with Baltimore, 45.4% in his 6 years with Atlanta, and 42.6% in his 1 year with the Giants. So wow. That's a big difference. Let's look at Latavius Murray while we're at this, because you're asking this question. You're saying, how do any backs compare in other systems? Latavius Murray played all his good years other places, right? His career success rate is 48.6%, and he was at 58.0% with the Ravens. Wow. So he did have a good run in New Orleans. He was at 59.4% with the Saints over a 32-game period. So that's 2 years in 2019 and 2020. But he's 42.2 with Oakland, 42.7 with Minnesota, 57 with Buffalo in only 79 carries, and then 52% with Denver in 160 carries. So his success rate career is not bad at all, Latavius Murray, but he was at his best when he played with the Ravens.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I want to see how effective Gus is without Lamar, because we see Gus as a great running back. I would really want to see how he is outside of having Lamar as running mate.
Right. No, I think his success rate will drop by 3 or 4 or 5%, 3 to 5% in that range, kind of as an expectation. That's where it's at the over-under.
That's fair.
All right, let's move on and talk about the tight end position. Likely in Andrews rested again. Andrews, the word is he'll be fine for the opener. And we've now heard that it wasn't just Andrews. Ross was now in a car crash recently too, and yep, suffered a concussion. So, the news just keeps getting better in some ways on this injury front.
Those 695 drivers.
Yeah. Charlie Kohler, had a very poor game. We'll talk about that in the individual things, but he played, he was first up. Kadir Ishmael came in. He was second. Didn't have a good game either. He's had a great camp. He's had a very poor preseason in terms, yep, of what he's done. Reigerman actually has already been cut. So he was an early cut today. So we don't have to worry about him, but he was the third in. And part of that is because he's playing fullback also. It's not necessarily because he's ahead of this last guy, Sharp, who may have fumbled away his NFL career in the saddest sense, with his one reception and one target.
Yeah, killer to see that him be probably his only highlight in the NFL or low light in the NFL. Reigerman didn't really impress me, really not good point of attack. He could get to his guy 50% of the time, but when he got there, not really getting any kind of push. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Ishmael not really getting that much of an opportunity in the preseason. He's making his catches when targeted, but in terms of making a play, he's not really there for that. And then Kohler has just been average, to say at best, just there, really.
In this game, he really got destroyed as a blocker. I'll talk a little bit about it because I want to go into some detail on that, but it wasn't good. Let's move on to the wide receiver position, talk about that. The first four in the game, I believe all these guys played on the first drive. Yep, they did. Were Cunningham, Kirkwood, Wallace, and Walker. So the one thing that's nice about that is that Walker is getting some playing time up front in the game against the best that the Packers would put on the field for this last preseason game. And not, you know, just getting in against second tier defensive backs later in the game. None of them looked good except for Wallace. Wallace, you know, made the one grab, made the most of it after the catch. And by the way, the note about him that I had in the article I wrote each week is almost exactly identical. Last week he had one catch for 31. It was 13 plus 18. This week he had one catch for 48. It was 16 plus 32. So nice to make a big play over the middle. Nice to make some yards after the catch in this. And I would see him being a bigger part of the offense going forward.
Yes, I really like Tylan Wallace. I think he's aggressive receiver, attacks the ball, dare I say Steve Smith-esque, just not really as aggressive as has not that much vibrato in his game, but he has good body control, get out after the catch. I like Tylan Wallace. I think all things go well, I would love to see him be the third receiver and surpass Aguilar, because I like his hands better than Aguilar personally.
Okay. And this is an interesting comment, because I think his targets will be increased this year. In 3 years with the Ravens, he's had 15 career targets. Give me an over-under on his targets for this year.
Starting at 15?
No. It's an over-under. So you're gonna give me the number of receptions, sorry, not receptions, of targets that you think he'll have, where the chance of being higher or lower is 50% each way.
I think 40 targets is a good starting point for Tylan Wallace, only because there's a lot of mouths to feed and likely Andrews, Zay, Bateman, and obviously Aguilar. But if he's...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Going to step up in the ranks. I think 40 is definitely reachable and attainable, but I think if you were asking me over under, I think 55 would be the line. 55 targets.
55. Okay. Now you've got a lot more confidence in him than I do. That's a lot of targets. Aguilar did not have 55 targets last year. I think he had like 45. Yeah. 45 to call. I think 22 is reasonable. That's still a dramatic increase in playing time he would probably have to get to, and targets, and frankly of connection with Lamar. And he's connected very well with Johnson, but he's also played with Johnson a lot in camp. So, you know, remember he's kind of a second tier wide receiver. So Johnson knows him and he's gotten used to where he's going to be and how fast he's moving and whatnot. So I think that's worked out for him specifically in that situation. We have seen a lot of difficulty for previous receivers to adapt to, or to earn Lamar's trust. Let's put it that way.
Yes. And I think the reason why I inflated his numbers is because the reports out of camp seem like he is making plays thrown from Lamar. I know in this previous joint practice with the Packers, there was a report that he did have a big play from Lamar. And also there's a health factor on top of that, that we can't control. So if Bateman goes down, I see as Wallace being the next outside receiver not named Tez Walker. So I would think, because I don't think Aguilar is really a boundary receiver. He's more of a slot guy. And then unless we keep Kirkwood, there's no really other outside wide receiver, in my opinion, other than Walker. So Wallace is that guy that can play inside and at the boundary. He's proved it in college and also in the NFL. So the touchdown he had was from, it was a backside dig. So he was on the outside. So that was to see him make that play. it just gives me a lot of confidence in him being able to become a bigger part of this offense and make an actual difference.
Would love to see that. I don't know if he's the route runner the Ravens would need at the X spot, because that's a big share of space for the offense. That guy has to really be able to run routes. But I don't think Walker is that guy either, by the way. Walker can go deep, but Walker's not a great guy for fooling the defender. And that's what's going to make him good. So we'll see. I think if somebody like Wallace had 40 targets, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think if he had 75 targets, it means somebody got hurt.
Yeah.
So you don't want that. But I think if he had 40, maybe I don't think that would be necessarily a bad thing.
Fair.
Okay. All right. And the next group of wide receivers that came in the game were Wade Miller and Isaiah Washington. Now, we've already heard about the cut of Justin Gage today, who didn't play. But Miller, also a free agent receiver brought in, clearly has a little more juice, still not getting on the field with the number ones.
He did make a couple catches, though, which was good to see. He made catches last week as well in his first preseason action with the Ravens. I guess it's nice to see him make his catches. I would love those catches to go to – I mean, those throws to go to Dayton Wade or some of the younger guys, because those are the ones that we really need to see opportunities from. But he's there right now. Wade didn't get that much of an opportunity, which was disappointing. And Washington had a handful, I think, right?
Isaiah Washington? No, he might have had one target. I thought he might have had zero too, because he only played about six snaps.
Okay,
yeah, he wasn't targeted.
Yeah. So the second group really didn't impress too much. Well, with the given opportunity at quarterback and obviously offensive line not helping.
I did kind of like what Wade did. Maybe I'll talk about him a little bit in the individual things. Unfortunately, bobbled a ball going out of bounds, nearly picked the ball off the ground that had been tipped twice, which was remarkable. And, almost had another really big highlight play. But anyway, I didn't think what he did was nothing, but I understand the way you're putting it there. And then Sean Ryan, he was already cut today too. He's the third group in. I don't think there's really a need to talk about him, but a guy who played the entire year on the practice squad last year. And, unfortunately he may be in a position like right, like Jeremy Lucien was, who was, a safety last year that played the entire year on the practice squad. He did get cut twice during that period, but it's very tough to play an entire second year on the practice squad because teams, if they don't see a notable improvement, will want to move on to a different young player they think they can develop. And I think they did see improvement out of Ryan. They brought him here, but unfortunately, you go from having 9 targets last year with 5 receptions during the preseason, which is a lot. That's a lot of targets for the preseason. And then he went to 3 targets, and he's getting them all late in games. I mean, he's the last guy in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's not a good progression for Ryan.
You think it was the fact that he didn't physically get to where he needed to be this year? Because Ryan is a tall guy, but he's more slim, and he's not as bulgy as the big X would be.
Ryan's standout characteristic to me is his ability to go up and get the football, to high point it, and to be kind of fearless in that regard. So Clarence Moore, if you think back to a guy who played for the Ravens in the early 2000s, he had 2 touchdown passes in the first version of what's the show, the NFL, Sound FX, when they played at the Jets in 2004 in a game where Ed Reed had a big interception. That he had 2 plays that are zipper, which is a high ball in the back of the end zone where he went up to get it. And he had another ball where he alligator armed it to get the Ravens off the field on third down that really hurt the team. Ryan doesn't have that sort of fear in terms of going up for the ball. So he actually, I think, plays larger than he is. And he has some good ability to run through contact. He's just not a great separator. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the issue. And he's probably not on the level of route runner you need, although I haven't really studied it as much as I should have to make this kind of a assertion. He's not the kind of route runner that you really want on the X, getting a, the lion's share of your space and maybe not doing as much with it as he should.
Fair.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the offensive line. I'll just refer to my article for this, but no, here we go. So they started with Jones, Voorhees, Samak got the start at center, which was a change from having Cleveland play there. And then Fa'alele at right guard and Rosengarten at right tackle. And the two starting guards, Voorhees and Fa'alele, came out after just 14 snaps. That says some things about what they want to do with these players during the regular season. I think it really says, as much as Harbaugh says, we've made all our decisions, but we're not telling anybody what it is. I think they did tell everyone what it is when they take Voorhees and Fa'alele out after 14 snaps.
Yep. And for Rosengarten, a decent 14, and for Fa'alele, a tragic 14.
Voorhees and Fa'alele. Rosengarten actually stayed in longer.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, Voorhees didn't have a really good game either. Better than Fa'alele, I will say that. Continuing to get manhandled at the point. Well, he's setting it and holding his block, but in terms of pushing back, getting no real movement. Once the ball carriers get to the hole, he's getting just tossed to the side, and they're making the tackle on his hole. So I think, like you said, they did make their decision at those positions. I think the fan base is not in agreement with that for sure.
Right. Well, I'm one, and I Jeff Striebeck's been very direct and specific about this when he talks to his group of followers, basically, on Twitter. He basically says, look, whatever you think about the relativity between, and I'm paraphrasing what he's saying, hopefully I'm not misquoting it. If I am, Jeff, please reach out to me and tell me what I've gotten. I'll correct it. But that whatever you think about how the Ravens should view Cleveland, Fa'alele, and Voorhees, that the Ravens grade every game, they grade every practice, and they have a different feeling about it. Now, I as someone who scores offensive line play, I'm just seeing something different. And we've got 621 career snaps for Cleveland now in the regular season that we have as background information on this. We've got this year in the preseason, which included some mistakes, the errant snap, which I don't think has anything to do with him playing guard, by the way. And he made other mistakes, but he was a lot better than the other two guards in this preseason. So my own personal view is he's clearly the best of the three available guards that seem to be topping everybody's thoughts right now. But that said, there's something else they don't like about Cleveland. It's been apparent since he was failed the conditioning test in his second season that there was a problem. And it seems to have been a problem which has stuck with him, whether it's a work ethic thing, a processing thing, whatever it might be, an excuse thing. I'm not sure what, but something is pissing off probably John Harbaugh, but maybe Joe D. Maybe he's the one who got pissed off by it. About his work ethic, the way he approaches his job, the amount of seriousness he takes it with. And Fa'alele definitely has the reputation as being a guy who works his ass off, a guy who's, one of the first people at the facility and whatnot. And sometimes you want to promote based on that. And other times you'd be a fool to promote based on that characteristic. And unfortunately, if we're talking between on an offensive lineman, I really want to know what they can do on Sunday between 1 and 4 p.m.
Yep.
I'm not really that interested about what they're doing on Wednesday in the classroom. And I want my coaching staff to think well enough about how they have to make a special set of rules for that player. So, I'm going to digress and tell a story here. Jim Boughton wrote the book Ball 4, famously. And a lot of people, your age in particular, don't really know it because it's 55 years now since he wrote it. But he was basically keeping a daily diary of his experience with the expansion Seattle Pilots in 1969. And he's talking about a lot of other news that's happening in baseball at the same time. And it's very interesting, very timely. And you know, it talks about kind of the very middle-class life of a baseball player at that time. So it's great stuff. It's a book I highly recommend. It's not a heavy read by any stretch. It's a lot of interesting material. It gets into the clubhouse of baseball. But one of the things he was talking about was Dick Allen. And Dick Allen was a guy who was a notorious troublemaker, but a great player, great hitter for years in the National League, came to the American League, won the MVP in 1972 with the White Sox, big power hitter. And he said, if I were running the team, it'd be easy. I'd have one set of rules for Dick Allen. I'd have another set for everybody else. And I'd say, if you're Dick Allen, you can play by these set of rules. And if you're not, then you can't. And I kind of want my coaches to be flexible and treat these people as individuals. I know there is some degradation in morale that can occur if other members of the offensive line think the rules are different for him, but that is something you need to address and correct and make part of the culture is that, hey, you know, yeah, we do have a culture. Great players get to have some leeway in terms of what they do. And good players get to have a little leeway in terms of what they do. And average players, you better stay in line because we don't have much below average players and we'll replace you if we need to.
Yep, very true. And I think it's the one thing that shocked me this past game about Cleveland is that we saw him at left guard. And that was something that had me sit up a little bit and really start thinking, okay, what is really going on behind the scenes? Because that was not something I expected at all. I thought if he was going to get any guard play, it was going to be right guard. And naturally, he's right guard, right? His natural position is right guard.
Well, you know, he's played mostly left guard in the NFL so far, but he did filled in a couple of games for Zeitler, but I would say more than half of his 621 snaps came on the left side. And it was true. Salah stayed on the right side initially while he's playing left guard. And then it was Corey Bullock who was in at right guard, and they could easily switch that. I mean, Cleveland could have gotten playing time on both sides.
Exactly.
But they didn't. And in fact, they gave both Bullock and Dalcourt an interesting trial at center and guard. Each got some time, which tells me they might be looking at either or both of them as potential players who might fit on the end of the roster somehow and be a possible center replacement, or just try to audition for the practice squad in terms of who are the guys they'll probably elevate if they have a problem at center into the season.
And that could bode true due to Manning getting cut earlier today. So that just one step closer for that process to come to fruition.
Yeah. Manning, another guy who'd been with the practice squad a whole year. And if the Ravens, you know, may not have seen as much development as they should, he had a very good preseason last year, by the way, really good. And it was something that it lasted him certainly the whole year in terms of keeping in the favor. And I was actually modestly surprised at how far down the order of entry he was for this game, because he didn't enter until the last two series in quarter four when the Ravens had no interest in playing offensive football anymore.
Yeah, tough to see Manning not really get the opportunity. And seems like his time with the Ravens could be over after this season.
Yeah, it could be over before the season. but we'll see. He might actually be back for the practice squad again, but we'll see. I don't think we need to talk about any kind of scheme from this game. The Ravens didn't do anything unusual. They didn't play any pony snaps. They played 1.29 fullbacks and tight ends per play, which is right between what they did in the other two games. A whole bunch of plain 11. They didn't have the guys who they would want to play 12 for weren't playing in the game. That's Lamar. It's Henry. It's Andrews. It's Likely. It's Ricard to try and figure out if 12 personnel is a worthwhile or what they can do with 12 personnel. Let's put it that way. The only guy they had on, you know, that was active who might be among 12 personnel looks is Charlie Kohler. And, if you don't have the other players, it really doesn't make sense in terms of trying to determine what you have in terms of your play action game, for example.
Yep, 100%. And your formation really doesn't matter when your offensive line can't block. So,
right. Well, true enough. Okay, since we've got a big second half of the show included with the defensive roster build, let's try and get at least half of our individual discussions taken care of now. So I'll just open it up to you. Talk about an offensive lineman, if you like, leaving aside the three that I'll talk about scoring for in the second part. Talk about any other offensive line you'd like to, offensive lineman, if you have such a player.
Yeah, sure. I think offensive lineman I'd probably go with is, I think I don't want to talk about Falele because I don't want to be negative. I think I'll go Voorhees.
Voorhees. Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Wanted to talk about Voorhees. I think he has the IQ. He knows what he's doing. He's been there. He knows the dance steps. I think at this point, it's translating that strength into functional strength in run downs. It shows occasionally, but in pass pro, it needs to be more apparent. And I don't know if it's initiating contact first. Like, it was tough to see him on that spin move where he lost against the Falcons. Those things cannot happen with Lamar in the game. And I'm hoping that we can see more of – I'm hoping the real games makes a difference. I'm hoping he's a gamer just like Ben Cleveland, and when the lights shine bright, he's able to come to play ball. And I'm hoping the preseason game was just not as much pressure as he needs to perform. Okay.
All right. Well, fair enough. Voorhees had a very tough preseason. Some part of me says by taking him out after 14 snaps and right after they had a touchdown to Wallace, that was the play, the last play he played, that it was a concession to the fact that they'd already made the decision and they didn't want to be criticized more about it by some bad plays that might occur thereafter. So you've decided that you're going to go with Voorhees and Falele. Well, okay. And there's a certain wisdom to not having those guys in the game just because you don't want them to get hurt. They're going to be your starters. Don't leave them in the game because you don't want them to get hurt. But there's also a certain avoidance of criticism risk that occurs when you take them out of there. I would say, fairly stated, both of those guys need more live fire. They need more. And they both were deprived of a significant amount of it in this game. And they had Rosengarten staying on the game to follow Lele's right. And they had they did not have Samak because he got hurt very, very shortly after that. But they had other choices at center, like Dalcourt, who would have been okay to his left. You had Josh Jones in there for the rest of the first half, so you can look at Falele, or sorry, Fred Voorhees, and say he had reasonable supporting cast next to him. I don't see why you don't leave them into the end of the half in that case when you've got your tackles both playing.
Yeah, it's really tough to see how we did the deployment this last game. A lot of guys that we wanted to see have certain opportunities and it just not come to fruition. It's going to be interesting. That's all I can say right now.
All right. I'll save the offensive line stuff for the second show. I do want to talk about two guys. They gave a lot of playing time to Dalcourt and Bullock. Those guys came in. Dalcourt actually came in a little bit earlier than Bullock. He played a couple series at center to end the half after Samak got hurt. And then both of them played the bulk of the second half. Samak sat out one series, the second to last, when Bullock got to move to center, but they both got a lot of playing time. This is basically an audition game, I think, for those two to give them some reps and see who they are a little bit better. I think they probably had already decided about Tayshaun Manning, obviously, if they just kept him into the last eight snaps. There's other players who just aren't a candidate to make the team, like Daryl Simpson, who was in very late, who are kind of in that same boat. But Bullock and Dalcourt, I believe they're trying to look at those guys and see what they have. And probably by understanding at that moment during the game how likely it was, how dangerous it was that Samak might have been injured, that Linderbaum's status is not completely understood by the team. And that they don't really trust Cleveland to play center, which I think all those are true to various degrees. that they really needed to test another couple guys out at center. And while you're at it, let's see what they can do at guard.
Yeah, I think this offensive line has become patchwork. And sadly, that's not the best thing to happen. But the backup center position is up for grabs. If Samak is not able to be fully 100% come the beginning of the season, I think Dalcourt did okay. And in terms of getting the snap where it needed to be and getting a little push off the line and a Bullock not too far behind him, but no one really being able to stand out.
All right. How about anybody from the tight end group? Anybody there that bears discussion here? I think we've kind of hit on a couple of these, but Ishmael or Kolar maybe?
Ishmael, I really want him to have opportunity. I think obviously it's not going to be this year. He could get one or two practice squad elevations barring injury. Not hoping for the injury to be Kolar, but obviously we wouldn't want Andrews or likely to get hurt. So maybe him getting some elevations this year and some playing time to get some live fire action and get those opportunities he didn't get in the regular season or in the preseason. And then continuing to develop, get in the weight room and become that Darren Waller-esque tight end.
Yeah, he's really looked strong at the point of attack, especially, kind of bullying some of the offense outside linebackers, I should say, and kind of getting this rivalry going with them, which is just unbelievable that Kadir could get that done. But then I look at his receiving opportunities, and he had 7 targets for 13 yards in this preseason. That's, 1.9 yards per target. That ain't going to get it done. So he also had, what's his yards per route run here? It wasn't good. About 3/10 of a yard. Yeah, 3/10 of a yard per route run. That's not going to get it done either. So in the end, he really has to make his way as a receiver. A lot of that, I guess I maybe understand because they're really not opening up their whole play action game in the preseason.
Nope.
And Kadir is a guy who probably has some play action ability. I'd say from what we've seen in camp, he's looked very good on box outs. He has not looked nearly as good on those kind of plays this preseason. He had a drop in this game, which was unfortunate. 2 weeks ago, I'd have said if they cut Kadir Ishmael, which I expected them to, that he probably was more than a 50% chance to be claimed in the waiver process. Now I think the chance is significantly lower. 10 to 20% is where I'd put it. Maybe 20. Let's be a little bit conservative on the more likely to be claimed side. But I think 4 times out of 5 he makes it through waivers. The Ravens get him to the practice squad, and it won't be until attrition happens during the season that somebody looks around at the available tight ends and says, we heard some good reports about this Ishmael kid in camp. Maybe we should give him a shot on our team.
Hopefully that's another conversation that happens, but we're able to keep a Kadri on the team and develop him for sure.
All right. Let's see. Let's talk about wide receivers. Who would you like to talk about among the wide receiver group?
I've talked about him at length on his show during a preseason. Kirkwood. I like him a lot. I think the Ravens are lacking that size at the receiver position right now. The tallest receiver in our room is Walker, and then it goes, I think it's Bateman, then Aguilar, which isn't really a tall receiver room, and we can't just rely on the receivers. The tight ends to be our big receiving threats. I think having an outside receiver that can mirror those same characteristics is definitely a big jump in our offense for sure.
Okay, so
Also, Munkin had the same type of receiver in Tampa and a Mike Evans. So being able to have a plethora of different body shapes would be good for the offense.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. So you have a little bit bigger receiver. He's honestly maybe a little bit more like a tight end in terms of his body type. There has some box out ability. And he played well, seems to track the football pretty well in that second game against Atlanta. Didn't really get any opportunities in this last game, which is not, terribly surprising with the offense, basically crap in the bed like they did as a whole. But But yeah, I could see him sticking around. I also could see that the Ravens, I think he's going to be cut, by the way, but I think that he's a guy who may stick around on the practice squad because the Ravens have composed their practice squad with a lot of veteran presence in the last few years. So the team's been very good. They've been contenders. They've had a lot of 6 and 8 year veterans on the practice squad. As a guy who like has a tremendous bias for developing players, I hate that. I absolutely hate it. I like having R and ones on that practice squad, who are guys you might get for 4 years in the future, and when you have 6 of those, and you have a couple second year guys and a couple third year guys, and a whole bunch of 6, 7, and 8 year guys. And Laquan Treadwell is a good example from last year. It's not like he didn't help the Ravens a little bit when they needed him, but Laquan Treadwell, for however many snaps he played for the Ravens last year versus, some first year player and the possibility that they'll work out, who do you really want to keep on your practice squad? I'm bothered by that thing. And I know the practice squad, you don't have a safe hold on those players is part of the reason why the Ravens maybe don't want to invest in youth the same way they otherwise might, because the Ravens are going to be later needing the player that they are developing than other teams who will just naturally poach from the Ravens as they have attrition and they need players. And also later in the season, they just want developmental options. So they'll sign guys off the Ravens practice squad out to futures deals.
Yep. And it's tough to get to that point. I think, like you said, having young talent on practice squad is definitely the most beneficial in terms of scheme development and also being able to trust them and get them in the offense or defense as soon as possible. Because we've seen John Harbaugh have a tendency not to trust young players too fast. I think Zay Flowers is the first player that he's given the keys to with swiftness. And J.K. Dobbins is the cover boy of not giving the keys to fast enough. And I think, to your point, having younger players on the practice squad would be great. And I just like Kirkwood as a all-around receiver for this offense, just bringing that extra element.
All right. Always a pleasure doing this show and others with you. Frazier, can you tell folks where they can talk football with you online?
You guys can reach me at @X/Twitter at @F_Rave8. That's @F_Rave8.
All right. Outstanding. We'll be back in part 2. We'll be talking about some additional offensive line scoring. We'll be talking about some MVPs from the game. I'm using air quotes here. We'll be making a roster prediction, most importantly, because that's not what I know you care about right now. Ravens have already had a few cuts, so we're a little bit late to the party here, but we're gonna get it all laid out there in terms of who we think, what we think the roster will look like by Tuesday at 4:00. And we'll look forward to talking to you then. Frazier, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.